From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. And happy Veterans Day to all of you vets out there. In a moment, Danion Brinkley joins us with his annual Veterans Day salute. Well, we dodged an asteroid. Oh, did we? It passes just 8,700 miles from Earth. Doesn't get much closer than that, with only 15 hours of warning. And although no one noticed at the time, it came very close. It was last Friday. The previously undiscovered asteroid came within 8,700 miles of the planet. But the astronomers said, gosh, we only knew about it 15 hours before it made its closest approach. Its orbit brought it 30 times nearer than the moon, which is only 250,000 miles away. Now, it was only 23 feet across, and they say that had it hit, there would have been not much damage, unless it had hit your house, of course. CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, is it being sabotaged from the future or merely by birds? The LHC, the world's largest particle accelerator, has been under repair for more than a year because of an electrical failure in September of 2008. Now excitement, mysticism. They're building again around the $10 billion machine as the European Organization for Nuclear Research gears up to circulate high-energy proton beams around the collider's 17-mile tunnel. The event should take place this month. Should take place. Now, the collider made headlines last week, as we reported, when a bird apparently dropped bread into the accelerator, making the machine shut down. The incident was similar in effect to a standard power cut. Had the machine been going, there would have been no damage, they say, but the beams would have been stopped until the machine could be cooled back down to operating temperatures. Brazil sought to uncover the cause of a massive and mysterious blackout overnight and concerns of energy supply stability for the 2016 Olympic host nation. The outage, which hit on Tuesday night, lasted 4 to 6 hours, plunging nearly half of the country into darkness, an estimated 50 million people, more than a quarter of Brazil's 190 million strong population affected. I wonder if there were any UFOs in the area that night. Male factory workers in China who got very high doses of a chemical that's been widely used in hard plastic bottles had high rates of sexual problems, according to researchers. Heavy exposure to BPA on the job was linked to impotence, according to the study, which adds to concerns about BPA's effects on consumers as well. Now, remember the last time you went for a cholesterol blood test and the night before they said, you got to fast 12 hours before the test? Well, now patients do not need to fast, they say, before having their cholesterol tested, according to a major report. After analyzing data from 300,000 people, Cambridge University researchers found that the results were just as accurate if the patient had eaten before the test. Poor 12-year-old girl from Virginia can't seem to sit still for more than a few seconds without sneezing. It's so bad on a regular day, Lauren Johnson can sneeze more than, listen to this, 12,000 times a day. Can you imagine that? Sneezing 12,000 times a day. I can't stop sneezing, she says. It goes off at about 8 to 9 times a minute. The condition, described as machine gun sneezing, started about 2 weeks ago when the little sixth grader caught a cold. And ever since, she's been miserable. Doctors trying to figure out what the heck is going on with her. Story in the news at coasttocoastam.com. A photograph purporting to show a 55-foot snake found in a forest in China has become an internet sensation. It was originally posted on a thread on the website of the People's Daily in China. The thread claimed the snake was one of two enormous boas found by workers clearing forests for a new road. They apparently woke up the sleeping snakes during attempts to bulldoze a huge mound of earth. It is big, if it's real. Veterans Day, and to salute it, Danion Brinkley up next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back this Veterans Day on Coast to Coast AM. Danion Brinkley, a writer, author, spiritual teacher, and I'm proud to say friend who has survived several near-death experiences. Danion's not-for-profit organization, the Twilight Brigade, has trained literally thousands of volunteers to be at the bedside of our nation's dying veterans. And as always tradition here on Coast to Coast AM, Danyon with us tonight on Veterans Day. Danyon, how fitting after this tragedy at Fort Hood in Texas, huh?
We couldn't be better. And, you know, George, this is just, for us, this is 11-11-11. This is our 11th annual report. And it makes us all, I'm sorry about what happened. But at least it makes everybody stop and think about what is occurring with our veterans. You know, and I live in it. I'm at the VA right now in West Los Angeles, making rounds, looking at people celebrate this day. And the kind of celebration that they're giving, this one-day salute, is good. But it's just not good enough. We're losing 62,000 veterans every 30 days. That's 1,800 a day. That's not including who's passing, what's happening in Afghanistan, what's happening in Iraq. That's not counting the guys who are committing suicide. I mean, it's just not counting it. And today is a day, and this event should make us all stop, look into our hearts and our souls, and think about these guys and think about us. Look at you and me.
Because this day is not just for veterans, is it?
No. This is a day to honor the greatness of a nation. Look at the statistics. We are 9% of the population. We represent 100% of the freedom, and we're 44% of the homeless. What's happened? This is my battle cry, like we do every year. You know, we take a good, hard look. Last year, George, thousands of coast-to-coast people came to my aid, thousands of them, and people would send from $2 to $10 to support the Twilight Brigade. And it's something that I'm really proud of, and I'm proud that we do this. Look at our age group. Look at the guys who served Vietnam. They just added three more diseases to Agent Orange. Disease number one, diabetes has always been there. Now they've added Parkinson's disease, leukemia, and heart disease.
Hey, Danyon, hold your phone a little bit, though. We're starting to get some feedback from you.
From me?
Yeah, it's from some way. Maybe you have to move a little bit or something.
Well, I'm on a hard line.
Are you? Okay. All right, but go ahead.
Okay. They've added, now we have 15 diseases that those people who served in Vietnam have, three more. And if you look at Parkinson's, leukemia, and heart disease as the three new ones, prostate cancer. When you start to think about that, George, no wonder that they're anticipating giving us, that President Obama has given us an advanced budget. Because in that advancement of the budget, they know that these illnesses are going to be more and more pervasive. Is that you or me?
That's you. That's you, I think. Okay. I can hear you, but I just want to make sure that...
I think it's important that with all of this is going on, we have two wars going on right now. We have guys coming back with PTSD and poly brain trauma. In the unit that I go and visit, 2,600 guys go through the PTSD program.
Jeez.
Think about this, George, and I'm not trying to make anybody sad because the story you're about to hear with the guy coming up next about DARPA, which they've tried to stop 50 times so far, but it still keeps reinventing itself. But we have to take a chance, everybody that listens. I created Veterans Care Plus because I appreciated everybody's donation, George, but I had to find companies who would look and help our people, our veterans, and their families. Take diabetes, George. We came home with diabetes. A lot of people from the war came home. We created habits that got our wife a diabetic, that has our children's diabetic, that has our grandchildren's as diabetics. So I found a group of people that are dealing with diabetes, giving us the best focus, the best price, and they are in turn coming back and supporting the Twilight Brigade. So I'd like to first ask everybody, if you know someone who has diabetes, no matter where it is in the family, if you're a veteran or a veteran spouse, if you're a friend have it, to please go to Danyon.com, D-A-N-N-I-O-N, and just punch the Veterans Care Plus and come and sign up. I'm getting support from the VFW, from the American Legion, from the Ladies Auxiliary of the VFW. And the number one problem in the VA, the number one request is hearing loss. think about this, 41% of all VA requests is hearing loss. And when you, and I guess we're having hearing loss.
But you know, Daniel, let me tell you, you survived several near-death experiences, but with that sound in the background with you, it sounds like you're talking to us from the other side.
Well, you know what? I don't know where it's coming from, but this is the VA's telephone, so you have to blame them.
Yeah.
And it's probably like everything else, George. Think of how many new diseases that's going to occur from depleted uranium, from the vaccines, from the guys coming back. And I was talking to some Afghanistan and Iraqi guys this afternoon. I have never seen such anger, George. Such anger and such senses of betrayal.
Anger because they don't think we should be there, or anger because they just don't feel like they're getting supported? What is the anger?
Anger because they don't know what they're doing there. Anger because they don't see a cause and a purpose that they're serving. Anger because when they get home, the system is so broken. I love the VA. You know, I've been here 25 years as a hospice volunteer. But the system is so broken, they're like weaving through a minefield. So that's why I created Veterans Care Plus. I found the experts with the VFW and the American Legion. I found the experts that will help people who are in trouble weave through these mazes. So let me say it again, everybody. Just go to Danyon.com or the Twilight Brigade and come and join this fight. George, you know something? Listen to this.
All right.
If diabetes, in 10 years from now, 67% of every child 21 years and younger will be a diabetic.
Well, you know, it's diet, it's lack of exercise, it's sugar and everything, Daniel.
And it's what they're feeding us.
Yes.
So we have to start today. That's why I'm asking everybody to come and go to VCP. Come and join up, anybody that you know. But you know one other thing too, George? We have to stop as Americans. And just like you opened the show with, just tell us the truth. What is the issue with deciding what to do about Afghanistan and Iraq? We're looking for 100 guys. We have 68,000 guys over there looking for 100 guys, and they're angry because they have no enemy. They don't know who their enemy is. They don't have a uniform. They don't have a line of debarkation like we, you know, we could pull back to the rear. They don't have it. And these guys are having trouble with it. The other thing is this. The discovery of so many new illnesses from the medicines that they're giving them, from the kind of food that they're eating. Coming back now with diabetes because of the meals and the packaged meals that they've been given, that you tear the top open and it cooks itself. Well, in our day, we call that white phosphorus or Willie Peter, you know, or what would they call that? Napalm. And yeah. So look at what we're doing. I sit here every day and I'll make rounds when I leave this, get off this phone. I'll be making rounds because of that 1,800 guys, a lot will not see the morning.
How do you feel, Daniel, about the fact that all this money has been spent for bailouts, for banks, and they're not putting the kind of money they should put into the veterans?
You know how angry it makes me. You know, it's one thing for people to read about it in the newspaper, George. It's one thing. But I'm a Marine, and you're a Navy guy. We see the waste. We see the inequity. And now you're watching these bailouts, and you're watching these guys argue over their bonuses, and we have guys sleeping in the streets. 44% of the homeless are us, 9% of the population. What I see is that we, the American people, and even more important, we of the night, the coast-to-coast people, we have to create a united front. That's what Veterans Care Plus is. If you know somebody with diabetes, come on this site. If you know somebody with hearing loss, come on this site. If you know somebody who's dealing with cancers, who's dealing with these illnesses. And I don't care who it is, George. They don't have to be a veteran, because we have family members, we have friends. But all of this, these companies who've come to Veterans Care Plus to support these programs at discounts are funding the Twilight Brigade. So what happens is, I'm helping you find the best medicine, the best eyeglasses, the best hearing aids, the best diabetic companies, and in return for getting that discount and getting you making this effort to serve, it funds my organization, and I'm proud to say we had 6 training this month. We're over 5,360 people, and I'm just so thankful that every time we do this every year, your people reach out and help, and this time I can give back to the people who come to help at VCP. And my last point about that, it is insane for the kind of money and the support of Wall Street and who we're bailing out and how they're walking around and taking money for nothing from the taxpayers and charging 29%. I think in the Bible that was called usury, and yeah. I think it was called a sin. So when you ask me how do I feel about them choosing between veterans and what the Bible calls a sin, that's an easy call.
Daniel, I was coming back from Chicago this weekend, and there was a soldier on the plane. And as we were leaving, he's in a neck brace, barely able to move, but he's there on his own, and he's in fatigues. And he looked at me and went, "Coast to coast." And I kind of nodded at him, and he smiled and he said, "I used to listen all the time, and I'm going to start up again," because he was back. He was back home now. And I looked at him and I said, "Is that a war injury?" And he looked at me and said, "Yes, sir, it is." And he kept walking. And I looked at this guy. He must have been 23 years old.
A kid.
Just a kid. And, you know, and they're all kids out there that are protecting us and our honor. In a situation that everyone doesn't understand, quite frankly, why we're there. In my fourth hour tonight, I'll be talking with a guest who talked to us a few weeks ago about the pipeline through Afghanistan. And I think that's one major reason we're still there. Probably one major reason we're going to send 30,000 more troops there.
You know
to
it
protect
is, George.
Us. Yeah, I mean, the mission was to get bin Laden. It didn't work. It failed. But we stayed, and there's no reason for that.
Well, remember, there is 3 gods: fossil fuel, gold, and dope. And any place you find fossil fuel, gold, or drugs, you're going to find this kind of experience. Look at what's happening in Afghanistan. The entire time the Taliban were in control, they never produced more than 64 tons of heroin. The 10 years we've been there, the 8 years we've been there, it stays right around 3,500 tons. Who's making that money?
I know. It's truly incredible. Daniel, we've got just about a minute or so to go. And one, I want to personally thank you on behalf of everybody here at Coast to Coast for the years of service that you have given, not only to this country, but to all the veterans out there who don't have a voice. They don't have someone running to the front of the line for them. And you do that.
Every day, George. So please, everybody, just like you did before, thousands of you, go to Danyon.com or the Twilight Brigade, punch the VCP, the Eagle emblem, and come to this family. Help me support to continue this program, and help me help you. Get the best quality services of the 4 things that we have there, especially diabetes, so that I can continue this work, and we can create an organization, George, that pushes back. And I'd like to thank all the Coast to Coast listeners. You look so handsome in that tuck. You look so handsome in that tuck.
I can dress up once in a while.
Oh, you look so handsome. And the other thing, too, is Tommy and the whole staff. I mean, I appreciate everything you guys have ever done. I appreciate the Coast to Coast listener because I am a Coast to Coast listener. And so please, everybody, come and push that button, fill out that paperwork, or make the phone call. Help me help. And, George, 70% of every kid in America between 17 and 24 is unfit to serve in the military today, and diabetes is one of the primary causes.
Danion's website is Danion, DANNION.com. In a moment, I shall return with a story that will just knock your socks off on Coast to Coast AM. Now, what you are about to hear tonight is a major disclosure event as we talk about time travel. Perhaps the cover-up will end as one of America's early time space explorers will step forward to reveal what he experienced, what he learned during the early years of time travel research and development by the United States government. Andrew D. Bashargo, a lawyer, writer, Mars researcher, and planetary whistleblower. He will bring his campaign, and he will relate his childhood experiences in DARPA's Project Pegasus. Andrew is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Andrew Bashargo, our special guest tonight, as we talk about truly an incredible story called Project Pegasus. Andy, welcome to Coast, my friend. How are you?
Good, George. Thank you for having me on.
Good. Tell us about you.
Well, I'm a lawyer in private practice here in Washington State, and I'm a writer. I hold 5 academic degrees, including a BA in history from UCLA and a Master of Philosophy from the University of Cambridge. I've been busy developing a profile in the disclosure movement in the sense that I've been leading a campaign to lobby the U.S. government to disclose several controversial truths that I'm claiming the U.S. government is concealing. One is that Mars harbors life. That is to say, the red planet is an inhabited planet, and this can be demonstrated by an analysis of NASA's photographs from Mars. I wrote about that in my paper, The Discovery of Life on Mars, which I published last year in 2008, which was the first paper to prove that Mars is an inhabited planet, and in fact, the first work to publish a photograph of a humanoid on another planet. Going back many more years, I was a participant in DARPA's Project Pegasus, which was essentially the U.S. time-space exploration program at the time of its emergence in the late 1960s and early 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
I've been studying my involvement, researching my involvement in Project Pegasus for 10 years now, in a personal quest to prove what happened to me and also to communicate my experiences to others. And next year, I'm going to be publishing a tell-all book in which I describe my experiences in Project Pegasus and give an overview of the true story of the emergence of time travel in the U.S. defense technical community 40 years ago.
Andy, what happened to you as a child? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I can relate the first experience that I had in Project Pegasus when I was brought into the project. My dad was a senior projects engineer for the Ralph M. Parsons Company. We were living in Morris Plains, New Jersey, in north central New Jersey. And when I was 6 years old, he drove me from our home in Morris Plains up to the old Curtiss Wright Aeronautical Company facility in Woodridge, New Jersey. Curtiss Wright was essentially a vast aerospace plant with many numbered buildings. And we went through the Air Museum there, where the vintage Glenn Curtiss planes were on display. And we entered the engineering building and then into a building numbered Building 68. And in a room there in Building 68, there was a device that consisted of essentially of 2 parenthesis-shaped objects. They were about 8 feet tall and about 10 feet apart on the ground. And when my dad had the technician turn the device on, it propagated a curtain of energy that looked like it was sort of falling between the 2 armatures of the device, not unlike, let's say, water falling in a water sculpture at a public park.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad explained that he was going to hold my hand, and when he counted to 3, we were going to jump through this curtain of energy, this curtain of radiant light, and we were going to find ourselves sort of in a tunnel moving forward, and that at a certain point, the tunnel would close, and we would find ourselves somewhere else on the face of planet Earth. And so we did so, And we arrived on a hillside in the state capitol complex in Santa Fe, New Mexico, several seconds later. So essentially, we jumped through the curtain of energy. A vortal tunnel opened up in the fabric of the time-space continuum, not unlike the near-death experience that writers and researchers like our own Daniel Brinkley have described. And I could see on the side of the tunnel that there were sort of luminous effects of other events going on that were rushing by very quickly. And then suddenly we popped into view in Santa Fe, and the tunnel closed, and we had essentially teleported 2,000 miles across country in several seconds. So that was essentially my entry into DARPA's Project Pegasus. I quantum leaped from Woodridge, New Jersey to Santa Fe, and over the next 5 years, Santa Fe would be used as sort of the collection area for these teleportings that were going on from different similar labs around the country.
Now, when you talk about disclosure, Andy, in the push for it, you're talking about all facets of disclosure, aren't you?
Right. I'm really emphasizing two major themes, though, one on the surface of our planet and the other off planet. With the Mars disclosure effort, this goal that I have to encourage President Obama to acknowledge the fact that Mars is an inhabited planet. What's driving that is my belief that as human beings on this planet, I believe we have a human right to a true telling of the natural history of the solar system that we inhabit. And I think that to the extent that Mars is inhabited and that we're beginning to visit Mars, part of the information that I'm going to be disclosing is that, in fact, U.S. personnel are already on Mars. And so we can predict that there will be even greater visitation, exploration, habitation, and colonization of the planet that every 2 years comes closest to our planet, which is the planet Mars. And so I think that it's critical that we disclose the truth to the American people and the people of the world that Mars is inhabited, because we're going to have to do the right thing regarding Mars. And I'm urging that we develop a UN protectorate for Mars under treaty as we begin to have further activity there.
Now, what is so fascinating, Andy, about this entire case is that, you're prominent. You're an attorney. You're a researcher. You really have nothing to gain with this story. Has it affected your career at all as you go forward with this?
No. In fact, it hasn't. It's amazing. I think there's a great... an abounding sort of desire and even an optimism on the part of the public now to move forward and embrace the critical issues that we're going to be confronting in the 21st century. And I think that people in my professional practice, my clients, fellow attorneys, have been very, in fact, encouraging of my truth campaign. And so, no, it hasn't affected it negatively in any way. I think it's had a positive impact. Of course, the other major emphasis of my campaign is more of an issue in deep politics that my fellow attorneys can relate to, which is this desire to have the U.S. government disclose the teleportation capability that Project Pegasus achieved over 40 years ago, and that's been kept secret all these years.
Explain this device, which you call a Tesla teleportation device.
Well, it was essentially a device that was found in Nikola Tesla's papers at the time of his death in January of 1943. There were two teams of investigators that were rushing to his suite at the Knickerbocker Hotel in Manhattan, two War Department agents and also two agents from the FBI. And the War Department agents got there first and seized Nikola Tesla's lab manuals, the papers of Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
Tesla's papers were never lost. My investigation over the last 10 years essentially proved that, in fact, they were forwarded to the individuals in the world who it would make the most sense to forward Tesla's shop manuals to, the physicists that were then gathering in Los Alamos, New Mexico, to build the atomic bomb. And this was a critical moment in the history of U.S. time travel research and development, because at that point, Tesla's work during the latter part of his career, during the last 15 or 20 years of his life, was weaponized. It was sequestered within the defense technical community because the war was on, and it was believed that the primary significance of the teleportation technology contained in his papers would be to enable the U.S. military to put troops precisely where they were needed on the battlefield. You know, all of those are marvelous veterans that Danyon addressed tonight. The majority of them were injured not on the front lines in combat, but getting to the front lines. And so it was hoped that teleportation would enable our military to strategically place troops precisely where they were needed on the battlefield. But the net effect of that decision, however appropriate it was during a time of world war, prevented teleportation from being introduced in the civilian sector as potentially our dominant form of transportation. And so my truth campaign around teleportation is to urge the president to declassify this technology so that we can implement it on a global basis to address the crisis of environment and development that we find ourselves in, the crisis of global warming, and launch a new Manhattan Project to establish teleports at all of the major transportation hubs around the world so that at least we'll have a fighting chance of achieving planetary sustainability.
Are you saying, though, Andy, that they've got the capability to teleport human beings like we saw in Star Trek?
No, in fact, George, the opposite was the basis of the technology. In fact, when we were small children being trained at the teleport at Curtis Wright in Woodridge, New Jersey, by Jack Pruitt, who was one of the team leaders of Pegasus, he would go on, of course, and become the research director of Project Montauk later. We asked, is this going to be, you know, Star Trek was just then a new television show, 1966. Sure. We're being. I had my first teleport to Santa Fe in 67, 68. We were dropped officially into the program in the fall of 69 when I was a third grader. And our first question is this going to be like on Star Trek, where you stand on a little platform and I think it's one of the other children in the program put and turned into 1,000 bees of light?
That's right. And, beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah. And so Jack explained, no, that the opposite is going to occur. He asked us what would happen, in fact, if teleportation was carried out like it was shown on Star Trek. And I volunteered the idea that if you disintegrated somebody, you would kill them. He said, that's right. You would stop their metabolic functioning. They would die. And they certainly might arrive somewhere, but not as a living organism. The teleportation technology that the U.S. government has been in possession of for now over 40 years, based on these schematics and mathematical formulae and an actual rendering of the device that was found in Tesla's papers, essentially works in an opposite way. It opens up a vortal tunnel or interstitial chasm, as it were, in the fabric of time-space. It essentially, when the individual teleportee jumps through that field of radiant energy, that curtain of light, of shimmering light.
Almost like Sliders, that show.
More like that, yes. The universe is actually wrapped around the teleportee, and they are repositioned when the tunnel closes. They're repositioned elsewhere in the time-space continuum.
How do they reposition it exactly to where they want it?
You know, I'm a lawyer and a writer, not a physicist, and in fact, I was a child on the program, in the project. I can say this, and that is, when we first began teleporting to Santa Fe as a group of children, beginning in the summer of 1970, we had a number of jumps to Santa Fe. They were just sort of acclimating us to the experience of jumping through this field of light, finding ourselves traveling at this incredible velocity through a vortal tunnel in time space. Could you ask your question again, George?
We were talking about how they pinpointed you.
Oh yes,
to specific
yes. I was talking about Santa Fe. What they had us do before we began those jumps in the summer of 1970 was we had to memorize the site map, you know, the street plan of Santa Fe, because during those years they couldn't pinpoint exactly where we would reemerge in the time space continuum. So in fact, not just the immediate state capital complex there in Santa Fe was the collection area, but all of Santa Fe was the area that they were sending us to. So in fact, I was involved in these activities at a time when it was still very new and dangerous and experimental. And in fact, they were so concerned that we would not only not arrive in Santa Fe, but that we might arrive with some displacement in time in the past or future, that they selected places like Woodridge, New Jersey, where the Lenni Lenape Indian tribe had existed for hundreds of years before it was settled by Europeans, And also an area of the country like Santa Fe, New Mexico, which had been the territorial capital of New Mexico in the Southwest for 400 years, because they were concerned that we would be lost in time, not in space like the TV show of that era, but actually displaced in time. And we actually had a seminar in which we were essentially educated what we should do if that should happen.
Did it ever happen with Project Pegasus, where they lost people by sending them off somewhere out there?
Well, during my investigation, I was informed by one source at CIA that several of the participants had literally been lost in time. There was one mishap on the project that I was a personal witness of, however, so I can certainly confirm that they weren't entirely certain what would happen when we would pop back into view. What happened was in the fall of 1970, we had a series of essentially rehearsals for that would involve having us jump into a certain location from different teleports around the country. I think this was in furtherance of the idea that they would send children to overseas locations to participate in espionage and not really be noticed as child spies. And so we were jumping through the teleport at Curtis Wright in Woodridge, and there were other children jumping through identical devices at different locations in different states in the eastern United States and in the Midwest. And I ran past a fountain, a public fountain there in the state capitol grounds. And right after I ran past that sort of monument there or fountain, there was a boy my age who was on the ground, and his feet had been entirely sheared off. And he was writhing in pain. You know, Daniel mentioned the plight of our courageous veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are the kinds of experiences that happen to those of us who are veterans in classified defense-related research and development activities. This boy had popped into view in the fountain there, and the fountain had been accidentally left on, so there was about 3 inches of water in the base of the fountain. And as a result, his feet arrived a split second after the rest of his body did, and he essentially slid off his ankles. And when I ran past his location, I could see that there were two red child's kid sneakers sitting in the fountain, and that his feet had literally been sheared off. And he was writhing on the ground, screaming, "My feet, my feet, I'm only 9 years old. What am I going to do without any feet?" So there were accidents in the testing of this technology. On one level, we were trainees. On another level, we were experimentees.
I was going to say, were you guinea pigs?
Well, I think that we were that, but we were also trainees, because they were expecting that we would be participants in a fully fledged time-space program that would emerge when we were older, that would essentially parallel the space program that NASA was then administering. So I think we were many things. We were trainees. We were experimentees. I know that they wanted to test the cognitive and physiological effects of this new Tesla-based teleportation technology on children, because obviously one of the strategic goals of having this would be to enable the president and other executive branch officials to teleport in a time-urgent way to different locations around the world, you know, between U.S. military bases, for example. And, of course, sometimes the president's children would go with him. And so they wanted to develop baseline information on how the experience of teleporting affected our thought processes, our ability to solve problems, and also just our basic physiological, signs. And so when we began teleporting as a group of children in the summer of 70 to Santa Fe, we would then be bused up to an old school site in Lamy, New Mexico, and we'd go through a basic physical examination and then sit down and complete several hours of standardized testing. They were developing data on how the teleportation was affecting kids. They were familiarizing us with the experience of teleporting. And they were clearly also still working out some of the problems with the technology, because there was this mishap that I was actually an eyewitness to involving a boy who lost his feet.
Were they planning then, as you said, you were trainees, they actually wanted you as a youngster so they could develop you later on as an adult?
Correct. They actually, in one of the seminars that was held, it was actually explained to us that there would be a secret time-space exploration program that would be as fully developed as the overt space exploration program under NASA, but it would continue to be administered by DARPA with reporting requirements to the CIA. Now, those were the two principal agencies that were administering Project Pegasus. Project Pegasus fundamentally was a classified defense-related R&D program that was focused on remote sensing and time. It was hoped that it would be an intelligence-gathering program and become even more so in the future.
Andy, we're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back with this astonishing story on Coast to Coast AM.